always feel a little silly and formal doing this part. But it's also fun. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this amazing tradition that Caroline started of the research symposium. It's nice to see you all. And I want to introduce Kalpana, who's going to be giving a presentation tonight on menopause, which I particularly am excited about. One, because I'm inspired by you and taking something also so personal and then going further with it through research and making a contribution around that. And I'm personally just fascinated these days with women's processes, life path experiences, and the connection to the body, especially when the body is a kind of forced experience. So I'm really looking forward to what you have to share. And as most of you know, Kalpana is from India and came to the U.S. particularly to study process work and graduated exactly a year ago. So is now a diplomat in process work. And that's amazing. This is kind of honoring your mm-hmm. 1 year mm-hmm. anniversary.
That's right, yeah.
Wow. So, and Kalpana is now, has a private practice and is beginning to teach. And this presentation is going to be part of a workshop mm-hmm. that she's doing. And she's working on teaching more both here in Portland and also planning to work and teach in India, and considers Portland her home. So welcome and thank you so much for sharing what you're doing with us. And please, everyone, actually, before we begin, just remember this is being recorded so people all over the world can appreciate the evening. So if you have questions or comments, please use the mic.
Thank you, Katya. And hello, and thank you all for coming. I want to thank Katya and for organizing the symposium, Process Work Center for holding the symposium, and Ani and Amy Mindell for rewiring my thinking, maybe. So I want to thank all of them before I start. Welcome to all of you. And, you know, before I say anything, I want to say that I apologize for anything I might say or not say that may hurt people's feelings or may make them feel excluded or make anybody in the room feel that I'm not taking things seriously enough or I'm being too trivial, because I feel it's such a difficult and hot topic that whatever I say, I leave somebody out, and whatever I try to use may not be useful for somebody. There's so much diversity in this that I want to acknowledge it before I start. And I want to say that I'm coming here with the best of intentions. And sorry if I do something I'm not supposed to do or say something I'm not supposed to say. Thank you all for coming. And I'm so happy to see the men in the room. And on this wonderful Sunday evening to be here. I really appreciate.
I'm happy to see us too.
Whenever the topic of menses comes up and menopause comes up, I get a lot of reactions. Anybody over here want to react? And, you know, if I... Okay, so lots of laughter and lots of giggling, and somebody put their hands out and said, not me, or what was that?
Sadness for the lack of ritual for having gone through something.
Okay. Sadness for the lack of ritual and not being able to publicly honor menses. That's wonderful that you say that, Suzette, because that's just what we're going to talk about. Yeah? I have not done any formal research on menopause and menses, but in my previous career as a qualitative market researcher, my job was basically talking to people. And now here as a therapist, it continues to be talking to people. So I'm going to draw from my experience, my life experience, and my interaction with other people, and say that there seem to be four sort of segments, what we call in market research attitudinal segments, which represent the target group. So I'm going to talk about all women and sort of club them into four segments. There may be more, there may be less. They're not exclusive of one another. This is just to give us a snapshot of what the population may look like. So one of the first one is distance. You know, when I speak to people or when people talk, they say, oh, I don't want to talk about that now. You know, there's always a gesture of putting away. And there's like a distancing from, not now, or not me, or... you know, I'm past all that now. So there's a pushing away and keeping a distance. The other segment I find was where people minimize. Like I know a few of my friends who say, oh, please don't talk about menopause. You know, enough of that. There's too much going on. I think we pay too much importance to it. And there's too much of a hoo-ha and a hoopla going on about menopause. So there's a desire to minimize menopause. Then a lot of women talk about the roller coaster experience. And I'm going crazy, I get these hot flushes, I can't sleep at night, I'm so emotional. It's all like extremes, a lot of extreme states going on. So it's a roller coaster experience. And the fourth segment is what I'm calling magnanimous. People who feel, it's okay, what's here is here. Every day is a good day. What is. So there's a kind of acceptance of, I have these visitors and they're coming and then they leave. And what's to get excited about? So there's a kind of magnanimous feeling about the whole thing. There is a fifth segment. Sorry about that. There is a fifth segment which has not come up much, but I do know is there, of women who feel, I'm calling that the militant segment. Angry women who feel that women's health is not, because we are in a patriarchal society, men's issues are very important. Women's issues are not paid much attention to. And if man can land on the moon and go to Mars, why can't we have medication that does away with menses altogether or simplifies our life? So it's a very radical kind of a stance. And I haven't heard a lot of it, but it is there. So there may be many other segments which I don't know about. But I just want to say that there are many other things going on. All these segments have a gesture and an expression and come with a gesture and a facial expression. And since we're in process work, we follow the body so much and we watch for secondary signals. And generally it's disowning or dismay or it's something unpleasant and undesirable. Almost everyone I have asked, including myself, want to put distance between me and menses and menopause in some way or the other. It's a common universal cross-cultural myth, and that is to consider women unclean during the time of menses. Women were restricted from worship, the kitchen, social interaction during this time. No wonder menses is disowned easily and something we want to hide in the closet. The only time menses is welcomed when there is fear of unwanted pregnancy. And then women will say, oh, thank God, my period, I got my period. I know I'm not pregnant. It's a great relief. And that is the only time it seems to be welcomed. Yeah, that it's true, isn't it? Many of you are laughing over here. But that seems to be the only time when we say, okay, great. Menses indicates a woman's ability to reproduce and is therefore a sexual barometer. Barometer. In earlier times, and in some societies even today, menstruating women are primarily seen as exclusive baby makers. And hence they need to be guarded because they're exclusive. They're not just baby makers, but they're exclusive to a certain family, to a certain tribe, to a certain clan. And therefore they have to be guarded. Our ability to reproduce made us the property of family and tribe. Women's identities as individuals was minimal, and they had no freedom, or really very little freedom. Today, we want to see ourselves, and we want to be seen, and we want to be appreciated, and we want to be respected as a person rather than a womb. You know, if I meet somebody, I make a presentation of who I am. It's completely secondary or incidental that I have a womb. We don't want to make public declarations about the flow. You know, like I'm sure in this room somebody is in menses just now, but we actually don't know who it is. And we are unlikely to ever find out because that is a secret. Even in close family members, siblings, we don't inform each other that, you know, I am in the flow or I am in menses. It's something that's kept quiet, kept hidden, and kept away in the closet. And if I want to be seen as a person and not a womb, then you'll be sure that I will keep it nicely in the closet. I'm going to keep it hidden away from me. Unfortunately, along with the outward non-disclosure comes a form of inner denial where we ignore an important part and process in ourselves. And I believe that in this way we do ourselves a great disservice. This may vary greatly from individual to individual. It may be present as mild neglect and to a more severe alienation, resulting even in self-loathing and self-contempt. So it's a whole spectrum that can be happening. And it's because we are in denial, and to speak the truth, we have to be in denial. If we are persons and the womb is incidental, then I don't want to talk about my menses. I don't want to say I'm menstruating.
I mean, that's one way to look, Kalpana. You can go the other way also, just to say. You could talk about it all the time. Yeah. Oops, sorry.
That's one way to say it. Uh-huh. But you can go the other way, uh-huh, and talk about it all the time and make it part of public discourse, and people have to talk about it and listen to it.
That's right. But generally in public today, in what we call civil society, we don't talk so much about it. Yeah, that's why I said civil society in inverted.
Right. Yeah, traditional CR. Mm-hmm. Sexist CR.
That's right. Yeah. And then you have the other extreme in other societies, in more traditional societies, where women are simply banned from the kitchen. They're simply banned from going into the temple. They have to not go into certain parts of the house. You behave differently, you wear different clothes. It's a public announcement. Everybody knows about it. So these are the two different ways. They are the two polarities which I'm talking about. In traditional societies, coming of age rituals are public celebrations. But they were also followed by the shackles. In order to give up the shackles, we also gave up the celebration. Shackles is like handcuffs. You know, a girl would have freedom in a traditional society. The minute her menses started, she had to start wearing, in Muslim societies, you wear the scarf. And then you can't talk to boys, you can't do this, you can't do that. So all the restrictions start. So it becomes a form of imprisonment. So if you don't want the imprisonment and you want to be free, then you also don't celebrate. In earlier times, menses came with taboos that interrupted everyday routine. We gave up the relief from routine that comes with imposed seclusion. There was imposed seclusion. Housewives couldn't cook. So for 5 days, the family managed without her cooking or doing heavy chores. So with that imposed seclusion, there was some relief from routine. We gave it up and we hardened ourselves we burdened ourselves more into our everyday roles. So we took on the everyday roles every day of the month. So we never got any relief for it. We gained more in the outer world at the cost of something in our inner lives. And we continue to carry the baggage of the past along with the increased responsibility of the present. And the future? Menopause awaits us all. If we live, we will pause. So when the time comes to accept menopause, we are confused. We feel the loss of something we did not fully own in the first place. So now I have a story for you. I'll just repeat. So when the time comes for us to accept menopause, because that's an inevitable milestone, it's going to come. When the time comes that, oh, it's time for menopause, my menses is going to stop. We feel the loss of something we did not own in the first place. When we were in menses, we never celebrated it. And now that it's time to lose it, we're thinking of what? So I have a little story for you over here. Yeah? Is it a heavy topic or what? Yeah?
When you ask that question, is it heavy or not? I guess there's lots of levels to that for me. Personally, what comes up is like the actual like experiences of menstruating and the pain and hardship that can bring up. And so in that way, it's like it can be. For some women, it has been at some points for me, like it's a big experience. Mm-hmm. And then just what's on my mind when you talk about menopause is also death somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, that like mm-hmm. just the life process mm-hmm. and that it signals mm-hmm. a whole
yes.
inevitable mortality.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Katya. I'm going to be talking about that. Yeah, yeah.
Also, I also think when you bring up death and the life process, it comes, and it's coming towards, menopause comes towards the latter part of life, which also means wisdom to me also. It's not just loss. Mm-hmm. There's gains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's our topic. The power of menses and the wisdom of menopause. Yeah?
And I just wanted to say, share something about the extreme states around either menses or menopause. That in my family, there was a continued story that when people would hit their menopause, people would go crazy at that time. Mm-hmm. And everything is blamed on that. It's like your depression, you're changing changing something in your life. Oh, it's just you're in menopause. It'll pass.
Yes.
You know, there was no, menopause was a way to negate any kind of transformation that was happening. Mm-hmm. So I just want to.
Yeah.
What? No. I mean the transformation was the thing is, when you've got everybody saying that to you, then it denies your reality of something real happening. It's very powerful. But but certainly my mother believed it. I mean, until it happened to me generationally, they did believe it. I mean, they did put themselves down and discount the reality of their experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Not everybody can stay with the experience as a transformation. They go along with the mainstream idea that they're just crazy.
Bruce, use the mic, please.
The reason I'm asking is because that was also very much a myth in my family.
Yes.
And I suppose later, you know, as we go on, maybe we can all talk about this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to say I really appreciate the naming of the crazy extreme states part, because so much of the diversity of mind and emotions gets turned into a problem and pathology, and there's so much that isn't talked about in menses and menstrual cycle, and it's even hard for me to say it, you know, menopause. And I think that there's a way in which we disempower ourselves and we don't bring it in, and then it ends up being something that's kind of behind closed doors, and then there's sort of like a pathologization and a medicalization, and then people can get caught up in that. And also, I just want to say, as a man, I mean, it's not just something that affects women. It affects everyone, because we're all in relationship with each other. And so if I can understand and be freer to talk about it with the women in my life, then it's going to help support them and help them go through what they're going through. So,
thank you for saying that, Will. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I will just represent a part which you say one of those who are not in, and that's why I'm a woman who was in the feminist movement in the 70s, and I was in the women's communities, and we celebrated, and we had big parties, and, you know, we draw on each other, so we menstruated almost in the same time, and it was a big party, and it was really giving us power and setting us free. And now when we are going into menopause, we share that too, even we don't live together anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's been a very powerful period in my life, and I'm so happy that I went through this, and I think it's not a curse, and I think it's an honor to have a womb, and I'm very happy about it, and it's a big part of my power. Mm-hmm. And I would say, and I know so many women in the rest of the world are not as happy as me, who grew up in Denmark, where it's very... it's not this whole part of our culture, of course not, but it's easier for us, I think. We are more free women. So I'm thankful for that, and I know it's so important to realize that so many women are so suppressed and out of society because of this. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting that we are already talking about menopause. Thank you for sharing your experience from Denmark. Yeah. It's interesting, we're already talking about menopause, and I want to say something more about menses. So I have a little story for you, which I'll read out quickly. Once upon a time, there was a woman who had a beautiful garden. She had worked for years to create this rhapsody of flowers, fragrances, colors, textures, and the sound of the bees on a hot summer's day filled your heart with quiet joy. She was indeed very proud of the hard work she had put in to create this wonderland. One day she woke up to find a large boulder in the garden. And she was annoyed with it, and since it was too heavy for her to move, she tried to disguise it in various ingenious ways, but she never really got over the disappointment of it marring the beauty of her landscape. The years rolled by, and she got used to it. One day she woke up to find the boulder gone, and she was relieved. Now she could go back to making her garden perfect. But she soon realized that not only did she miss the boulder, but the other creatures of the garden, the plants, the flowers, the shrubs, too, were sad, and they began to droop and wilt. The garden never looked quite as beautiful as before, and fewer bees and butterflies wanted to visit. Soon after, she learned that the boulder had magical powers and that had infused her garden with special vibrations that helped it to flourish. The woman was sad that when the boulder had been around, she had never seen it as anything but an inconvenience and hindrance. In hindsight, she knew better. And when a boulder appeared in another woman's garden, she made it a point to step across and tell her about the magic boulder and all the wonderful qualities it had. So, I was thinking about menses and menopause, and I was trying to think of, find a metaphor in nature that I could use to explain how I think it influences our lives. So I'm going to start with, I'm going to use the analogy of the sea and the shore. And this is the shore. And then this is childhood, where we are grounded and we need our parents, we are supported, we have shelter, and things are more or less stable. I know they're not stable for everybody, but in an ideal situation, they're more or less stable. And then you come to adolescence, where the waves start. And this is the surf. You know, when the surf comes and hits the sand and how much chaos it creates, and it picks you up and tosses you down and thrashes you around, and you think you're drowning, but you're in the air. You think you're in the air, but you're slammed on the sand. So it's a chaotic time. And then the ocean, here's the ocean, and this is our adult life. And the ocean has its currents and it has its winds, and we put our boat out and we make a journey, and some of us do well and some of us don't, and we struggle on and we try and go in one direction, but we land up in another direction. And that's what life is all about. Then comes the next shore. Yeah, there's laughter in this room and everybody's smiling. You know what this shore is all about, isn't it? This is time when it's perimenopausal. And I'm going to use this time, I'm just going to use the term menopause to describe this time. And then you have the next shore, which is postmenses. So here are two very tumultuous times in a woman's life, probably in everybody's life, but definitely in a woman's life, where what you think you knew and what was a given suddenly changes. In this uncertain journey, one thing women can be sure of is A, menses. If you're a woman, you have menses. No choice. And if we survive and do not die at this point of the tumultuous waves, and I'm not saying this, I'm not just saying this. I know three women during this age between 45 and 55 in the US, people I know who have died, and I know five of my friends in India who have died during this time. So it is a serious time. Everybody doesn't make it. And if you do pass these tumultuous times and you come here, then you will meet menopause. But you have to first be alive to meet it. Menopause indicates a death of reproductive abilities. All women will go through menopause, and it's a period of transition from one stage of life into another. Transitions are difficult. They are a time of uncertainty and change. Someone else is calling the shots. We are in the hands of powerful forces. It's like being in the surf and in the waves, and we are being knocked around. Our experience of menopause is strongly influenced by our cultural myths and our own personal myths or childhood dreams of or memories. When I was working on this, I was tracking myself and I did my inner work, and earliest childhood memories, which resurfaced, you know, I'd something I'd never thought of, and when I started on this project, I started thinking about it. I must have been about 4 or 5 years old, and I remember one of our playmates was sitting on the porch and not joining us in play. She was a few years older than us. She must have been at least 5, 6 years older than us. And she had this very sad, depressed look on her face, and she was sitting on the porch. And I walked up to her and I said, why are you sitting over there? Why don't you come and play with us? So she sort of said, no, and you know. And then some adult said to me, she can't play with you, she's not well. And I remember standing there looking at this girl in the face and saying, don't pretend. You know, you're just faking it. Don't pretend, you come here and play with us. I seem to have carried this challenging attitude throughout my life. And have rarely faked it or stayed out of any activities. I have also been lucky in terms of my health. Maybe the other girl did have to sit out. Maybe she wasn't faking it. I have no way of knowing, because I don't even know who the girl was. It's just a fleeting memory I have. And maybe she turned out to be much smarter than I am, because she knew how to take a reprieve, you know. She didn't go dashing around doing everything all the time. These are some aspects of ourselves that I want to explore in the class. You know, what is your earliest memory, and how did you behave, and, you know, does it play out in your later life? Another interesting aspect that deserves exploration is how we are, or maybe as we enter the breakers for the second time. As a person, I've been through the surf in adolescence. Now I'm going through it the second time. And I started thinking, is there a similarity in me, how I was then and how I am now in my second round? And interestingly enough, I found that it was academics. Suddenly, late in my teens, my brain cells got fired up, and from being a completely indifferent student who sat at the back of the class and yawned and just got pushed from one grade to the other, I became very interested in studying. And eventually I did my master's from the premier social work institute in India. So it was a, you know, it was like, what happened to this person who never wanted to study or read a book or do homework or anything? What happened to her? How come she suddenly got inspired to study? And in my second time round, well, I came to Portland to study process work. So it's interesting that we somehow, in these extreme states, we somehow connect with ourselves and seem to pursue what we really want. And in my second surf experience, I find that I want to connect more with myself. I want to do more what I want to do. I don't want to depend on anybody. And more importantly, I don't want anybody else to depend on me. So the whole family thing of looking after and taking care of and being taken care of, I mean, it's wonderful to be taken care of. But I feel it's the beauty of being on my own and seeing what I can do. And that's almost like it used to be for me when I was 18 and 19. I left home and went to Mumbai and stayed in the students' dormitory over there and started studying a subject which nobody in my family could make any sense of why I wanted to do medical and psychiatric social work. But the excitement and the passion for doing that is now back when I studied process work. And on a lighter note, that was a time in my life when I cycled a lot. And now, after I don't know how many years, 35 years, 40 years, I'm back on the bike in Portland and cycling around. So it's fun. We don't know how, you know, we it's an interesting way of looking at your life and how it's gone.
So you're saying that these, on the board, these chaotic surf moments in a lifetime actually stir things up in many ways, not just the physical body, but what? The psychological body.
Thank you. That's a wonderful way of putting it. Yeah.
Interesting.
I have another nature analogy which I would like to use. And this one is, okay, so here is the sun. And I'm going to call the sun the patriarchal world or consensus reality, or daylight, or the material world, and what we need to live. You know, we need the sun. We need the sun to just to be alive. And then here is the earth. And the earth is the female body. I am the earth. And next to the earth, circling the earth, is the moon. So the moon is going around the earth, and the earth is busy going around the sun. Whilst the earth is busy in its orbit, the moon visits her regularly, waxing and waning. Now you see her, now you don't. The earth's primary process is to orbit the sun, and the moon is her secondary. Like the full moon, menses is a process we see visibly for a few days every lunar cycle. And then we don't see it, but we know it's there, doing its own thing in our body. Like the earth, so busy, focused on the sun, I too have focused on my outer daytime life. The moon belongs to my dreaming world, coming and going without any conscious effort from my side. I am the earth body in interplay between the sun, our world as seen in consensus reality, and the moon, the dark, private, personal area of non-consensus reality. When I become too devoted to the sun at the cost of my moon, or the other way around, if I get too fond of my dreaming inner life, both the sun and the moon react in a way that wakes me up. For example, if I focus too much on my working life, my career, success, money, fame, fortune, and ignore my inner dreaming world, I may end up with unexplained body symptoms, for example. It could be many other things, but I'm just using body symptoms as an example, like depression and backache that don't really respond to medical interventions. On the other hand, if I become too involved in my dreaming world, my moods, my feelings, my fantasies, my nighttime dreams. I may ignore the need to earn a decent living and become homeless and destitute, unable to sustain myself. The cycle, the waxing and waning, the coming and going, make me who I am and keep my sun and moon in balance. The issue of balance becomes even more important during the time of menopause. I believe that menopause is going to become the next important world issue. Today's baby boomers. Yes, you like that? Today's baby boomers will live longer post-menses lives than any other generation before us. And this span of life may go up to 40 years, which means that it is likely to be the longest that they will ever live at any stage in life. Today's girls menstruate earlier. I think we all have this experience where we are finding, where we hear about girls menstruating earlier and earlier. Yeah? Adolescence is becoming longer and longer. Adolescence. Okay. It's becoming longer and longer. Now we have social commentaries about how kids are staying with their parents in America. In India, kids always stay with their parents as long as they can. But here they are staying with their parents longer and longer, postponing having the first child longer and longer. Menopause is coming earlier and earlier to women. For various reasons. For one of them is for anorexia, one taking too many drugs, or the general stress and strain of life. Or for so the reproductive window is shrinking. And this stage of our life, post-menses, is becoming, there's a lot of reaction in the room. What's going on? You agree or disagree? Or?
No, it's just great to hear that.
Yeah?
That's a perspective that
new information to you. Which part?
Menopause.
The menopause is starting earlier.
Menopause is starting earlier. This is something... you know, it's even up to 37 years. And possibly it has started earlier, even in earlier times. Even in earlier times, menopause may have started earlier. And today in societies after war and depending on what's going on in the country, menopause. But now we are tracking it more.
But is this aggregate information because many women are now being able to have surgical options that do create an artificial menopause for them. So if you clump all of those people who died before together with, you know, the regular times, it may show that they're starting earlier, but they're really not. Do you know,
this is a general feeling I'm getting. I'm not a medical person, and I don't have statistics to support me. But I do have information that last year, 2008, by estimation, women between the ages of 50 and 65 were the largest demographic group in the United States. And there is a very real expectation. Not only are we the largest demographic group in the United States, this is also an economically independent group. So the women are... Not only large number of women in that particular segment, these women are also economically independent, more economically independent than ever before. And there is a very real expectation that this group will change the very fiber and fabric of this country and the world. And I'm quoting here Dr. Christine Northrup, MD. She's written a wonderful book on the wisdom of menopause. I would recommend it, and it's an amazing book. Yeah. Christine Northrup, MD, The Wisdom of Menopause.
She was on Channel 10.
Yes. She is completely amazing. I can't tell you how exciting reading that book has been for me. I really learned a lot and enjoyed a lot. And this is where I got the information of 40 years span. Women will live till 84. And not just live, they will live fairly healthy lives and be independent and be able to move around. Now, this is an amazing event in world history and has many ramifications. We are the first generation with this privilege and with this opportunity. I also feel a responsibility to be a good role model for coming generations. Men consider, or at least pretend to, consider women less than because of menses and menopause. Unfortunately, women also consider older women less than because of menopause. The youth culture dedicated to looking young, youth connoting happiness, desirability, sexuality, promise, and so forth. So much so that menopause is a bad word and rarely used. Now, why am I saying that? Check out any advertisement in any magazine or on the TV.
Actually, TV is changing. They're having menopause ads. Have you seen that? They have menopause ads now.
Okay, so Rhea is saying TV is changing and they have menopause ads. But I checked one of the women's magazines last few months' issues. Every ad is about reducing, retarding, reversing, lifting, shrinking, coloring. Basically, blaming, banning, denying, apologizing for age. So we now have the largest demographic population in this country in denial. How painful that is going to be. And what exactly is it that we are so dedicated to denying? Yeah. Death, Rhea says death, yeah. Different people react differently at this particular stage in life. You know, as children, we used to play this game called you draw a line on the ground and you divide the room. One side of the line is the sea and the other side of the line is the shore. And then you call out, in the sea, on the shore, in the sea, on the shore. So it goes like you're hopping, in the sea, on the shore, in the sea, on the shore. So somebody says, on the shore, and you're already in the sea. So you are going to get out. There's no way of being stable. So being in menopause is like that. Different people react differently to being shaken and stirred up. Some people are fearless, feel alive, reckless and adventurous. Others turn serious, introspective, start looking at long-term life goals, drawing out future plans, changing or giving up behavior patterns, dependencies, relationships. Some of us give it all up, yet others don't find the need to change anything. So it's a wide spectrum of reactions that happen here. How do you respond? When I was working on this, I tried to see how I had changed during the time of adolescence. I spoke of this earlier, that how my brain got fired up and I started studying. And how I feel I connected to my deepest inner self. So now I'll go on to talk about, there are many slang words for menses. The curse is a common one. When I was a schoolgirl, we referred to menses as chum. As in friend, yeah. And I always assumed it meant friend. And it was used as, oh, I've got my chum. You know, I can't go swimming today, I've got my chum. Or, oh gosh, my chum is going to come during the time of the hockey match. So we refer to it as chum. I always thought it meant friend. However, a few days ago, I was informed that chum is a fishing term. And when you go fishing, you put chum, which is supposed to be bits of fish or bait, which you put in the water to catch the big fish. Now, we could have a whole nother class about that, where the term chum is used as bait for catching fish. And I didn't know that. Letty, here I'm presuming the bait is men.
Yes, I'm thinking of like the bait is men, but the actual bait is the sperm for the seed. I mean, it's like, right, it's not just men. It's like some deeper.
Oh, yeah.
You're
oh, yeah.
baiting something
it's
deeper.
It's just that men happen to provide that sperm. They're sperm carriers.
You're right.
I think it means
friend. And again, it is a friend because it's real. Okay, the men are saying that they work hard to provide sperm. Yes, I. That's right, Will. I would like to acknowledge that men work very hard to provide the sperm. Some of the women in the room are informing the men that we have technology that provides sperm now. So maybe my next class should be on the role of men, changing role of men. Whilst I was researching this and thinking about menopause, menses, I believe that there is a huge amount of anger. This is my belief. Yes, Suzette, you want to say something?
I just had a hit on something. I'm sorry, can I just...
Yes, please go ahead.
Just this thing of, so we're laughing so much, but Kalpana, the sense that we are just a womb and a man is just a penis, or that we, do you know what I mean, that we're just a seed? Or, I mean, the ownership is there, especially as technology is coming mm-hmm. into its mm-hmm. entry. I'm just saying it's,
yeah.
Laughter has a lot to do with that. Depersonalizing the penis, or is that right?
Yeah, it's also an edgy topic. You know, I'm appreciating everyone hanging in here and supporting me while I'm going on. And thank you for participating. And yeah. Whilst I was researching and thinking about this topic, I began to realize that we women possibly feel very deep, strong anger, maybe even rage about menses. But because of its intensity and vast dimensions, we quickly marginalize it and put it aside and ignore it. As women, we traditionally know that one way to cope is to simply accept. So the anger goes underground and spreads, maybe erupts in different ways at different times. Maybe other women are the victims of this rage and anger. And throughout history, we women have been known to be cruel to one another. This is an, you know, we could debate this and maybe it's more true or less true, but this is what I think, and I see some nods in the room. Since the anger is so difficult, it is followed with denial. We deny the anger, and the only way some of us know how to cope with it, and that is probably the only way some of us know how to cope with it. And like fish, we don't know we are wet. We don't even know that we are angry. Well, the next step is bargaining. You know, these are the classical steps. We start bargaining. As women, according to me, we are really good in bargaining. in order to achieve in a man's world, I will work harder. I will be more like a man. I will ensure that I put more effort. I will also crack the whip more harder so that nobody can fault me because I'm soft and I'm a female. So I'm going to be trying harder and harder, and that's my style of bargaining. Sure enough, this brings in depression. All this would surely depress me. So much feeling without a name, a reason, a season. A gray cloud hangs over me, and sunshine can barely break through. And I think depression is really a very significant thing in a woman's life. Not all, but many. And I think more women are depressed than men. And the final stage is acceptance. Finally, I come to terms with myself, my menses, my life, my role. These are the classical five stages. Maybe I get stuck in one stage. Maybe I can't make it down to acceptance. Maybe I just stay in the role or in the stage of anger or depression or denial. Maybe it's not easy to go through all that and get to where I can accept. So I started working on this myself, and I thought, okay, so I'm angry. I'm angry with myself. I'm angry that as a woman I have menses, and now I'm angry that as a menstruating woman I'm going to go into menopause. And I'm angry.
You'd be glad that you're going into menopause. You're getting rid of the menses if you're angry at it.
So I worked with that's a good point, Rhea. That I should be glad that it's all getting over.
I mean, one could.
Mm-hmm. So while I was doing my inner work and following my anger, I noticed that there's a lot of power behind that anger. You know, I go oomph with anger. I stamp my foot. I wave my hand. My hand is in a fist. I've got this fierce look on my face. So I tense my arm muscles. So I'm like a warrior woman in anger. Which means that anger is fueled by a huge power. So instead of being angry and I pick up my power, what would happen? And guess what happened? I thought, as a collective power, if I go into my own power as a woman, and I represent that as a collective power of woman, I am the mother of all men, as well as the bearer of his seed. Without me, he simply doesn't exist. Without me, we all don't exist. And that is my power. So if I could use my anger and go into what is secondary to anger, it is power. The next stage is denial. If I am feeling my power and I could integrate it, digest it, and make it my own, why would I want to deny it? I would share it. I would be expansive and generous. My inner spirit would expand and embrace all. My boundaries would extend and include all and leave no one out. I would be one with the universe. Then we come to bargaining. I wouldn't feel the need to bargain. Bargaining only happens when you feel you're in a position of weakness. If you're in a position of power and strength and you want to share and you don't feel boundaries and you don't say, this is mine, this is yours, and don't take anything from me. And if you're in an expansive place, where's the need to bargain? We've all got enough power. We can all share it. Depression. from this place of not needing to bargain, feel being in my power, feeling no boundaries, chances are I won't be depressed. But if I am depressed, then I would feel my depression as something that needs to be felt for somebody. Maybe my own female ancestors who never had the luxury of feeling sorry for themselves or being depressed. Maybe they just died too early to even know. So if I feel depressed, then I would feel it. I would honor the depression. I would feel it with honor and feel its work I'm doing for somebody else, somewhere else. And I have the ability to do the work. And in acceptance, in the last stage, in acceptance, I would share the love. Because it's great. Life is wonderful. I'm powerful. I have no boundaries. I am generous. I can give. I can share. I can feel whatever feelings I have, even if it's depression. I can feel it. I can own it. I can be it. And from that place, I would say, share the love. Now, if you think this is some woo-woo, new age, love guru business that I'm going into, it's not my style, as you know. I want to give you two examples of contemporary women who I believe are doing this. When I was researching this, I was delighted to find how much Oprah and Christy Northrup are out there talking about menopause. They are great role models. To me, they represent a rare combination of public acclaim and personal integrity. To me, they are saying, this is who I am. This is how I feel. I did not get here without heartbreak. And if I can do it, you can too. Being successful professionals and public figures, they now share their inner, more private process whilst going through menopause. These are powerful, rich, strong, beautiful women reaching out to the rest of us, telling us how bad it can be, how good it can get, and how to help ourselves. Teachers and guides to one of the least researched, marginalized, and misunderstood stages in a woman's life. These are truly brave women who are willing to take whatever they know and get out there and share it. Imagine that. Oprah, one of the most powerful, influential, rich, and well-known public figures of all time, the world over, actually hangs her linen, some of it quite dirty, depending on your perspective, out to dry. And she becomes more powerful, more rich. What's going on over here? That makes me think. In my identity as a therapist in private practice, how do I handle the subject of menopause? In my identity as a woman, where does menopause fit in? In my family, my group, my community, how does menopause play out? It made me realize that menopause is a shared global process that has social, cultural, psychological implications. Its impact and assimilation is insidious and rarely identified. Today, I make a modest effort to focus on this marginalized area. Thank you all.
I just want to say thank you, Kalpana. It was a great. I loved your stories and your passion. So, and just the topic, it feels really good. And I also just want to bring the word in blood, that's so secondary. That to say that here, you know, that menses is the shedding of blood, and that to me, growing up. I really connected with that the most when I was starting menopause, and that when I would travel to different places, that I would make a ritual every time when I had my, I called it my period, mm-hmm. that I was giving blood into the earth at that point, and I was leaving a part of myself. I was bleeding into the earth. Something about that. I made a ritual of that each time that last year that I knew, or the last 2 years as I was, you know, as that was slowing down. But there was something so, no matter what, just powerful about blood. Mm-hmm. And the, I don't know, I just want to bring that in.
Yes, yes. When I was writing the paper, I was frequently using the term, my bleeding self. And somehow it got edited out. And it's something we really don't talk about, our bleeding selves. And I find I didn't even say it. I didn't even use the expression. So it's, the taboo is so strong that even when I speak of the topic and want to be, you know, want to be congruent, and I'm still missing important words.
I like the lighting.
Yeah.
I used to bleed, and okay, granted, I lived not in the mainstream, but we all used our menstrual blood to water our plants, to fertilize our plants, and we all had great plants.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then there was the time when we gave up using Kotex, right, and we started using rags. Mm-hmm. Well, that's when we started watering our plants with our menstrual blood. So we're using rags.
Can I ask you to identify your group? Just because people all over the world are going to hear this. And there are so many countries sitting right here in this room.
It was in the 70s.
This was in the 70s.
It was the women.
Uh-huh. And would you identify...
Feminists.
Would you identify as hippies or no? Or flower power? Or
I wasn't really a hippie, but maybe others were.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Suzette was a hippie.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I wasn't a hippie.
Women's movement, it was different from the hippies. They were doing what you, in a way, showing here, taking the power of our bodies and our...
It's also what most ethnic societies do. But then it also comes with the restrictions.
We didn't have restrictions.
Of course.
I grew up in a very traditional culture about that.
Mm-hmm.
So
in Mahiko.
That's diversity here.
Yes.
And it's true. Yeah.
But you're radical now.
I'm radical now, yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, in a way, I also were radical.
Yeah. So we have somebody from Denmark, we have someone from Mexico, somebody from the U.S., Japan.
We are going to say that a very radical thing for me is we women are chingonas.
Ah.
Yeah. It's a very bad word in Mexico, but saying that is fucking good.
Oh, women are so fucking good. Yes. Yeah, lots of excitement in the room.
Chingonas? Chingonas.
That's another
word. For the international that maybe are hearing Spanish, because I'm in other time hearing in. Sorry for that. Yeah. But.
No. That's another word which I used constantly when I was preparing the paper, and that was empowerment. And I find I haven't used that this evening. So I think that's what your chingora, at this, the way you are interpreting it, means. It's a form of female empowerment. Yeah. Nice word.
I just want to say this, the idea about depression. Like, depression is also going down into yourself and into the earth. And that's not just, you know, it doesn't have to just be negative.
That's an enlightened process worker's view. Yeah.
So I like to share that in a menopause, you kind of made adolescence time and menopause as the same wave time. That made me kind of easier to understand.
It made it easier for right. you to understand when I compared the surf to adolescence and uh-huh. to menopausal time.
Right, because
transiting time, yeah.
Yeah, my adolescence time was very roller coaster time, mm-hmm. so it's very mm-hmm. easy to imagine. Just
yes.
To yeah. share.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for noticing. In fact, that was my effort. I wanted to include men in this discussion. And I wanted to use analogies and metaphors which we could all identify with, both as men and women. Thanks for picking that up, Jiro.
Thanks for making inclusive presentation. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I just wanted to say that, yeah, when you were talking about the adolescence, I remember my mom going through a phase like when I left college or left high school and went off to college. She was kind of like an adolescent, and I want to go ask her.
Uh-huh.
Was that when you were going through menopause? I really want to ask her about this. It inspires me to really just connect with my mom
mm-hmm.
around this.
Mm-hmm.
And also for me, I always thought that I went through monthly, I never really tracked it, but I felt like I went through phases of mm-hmm. my psyche where I was feeling different in a certain phase and it felt different. And I was kind of jealous of women that they had something to ground it in, something material and specific, and this is my time. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I can't really track it. I don't know really what it is. And
I see lots of people nodding in the room. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And thank you for sharing that you want to connect with your mom and talk to her about those times. I think it's really sweet. I feel really happy that you would want to do that. Yeah.
I think I read one research that if you track men's emotional wave, it has a monthly wave that mm-hmm. I read. And also, I personally know if it's full moon, mm-hmm. I'm pretty high or low. Mm-hmm. Like emotionally different. That's mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, mm-hmm. I know.
It's true. And men have
men have a hormonal cyclus, which is you can align to ours. And actually, you have a kind, it's not a menopause, but you have a hormonal crisis in when you turn in coming to the 50s, something huge happened in you as well, it's true. Mm-hmm. But it's not so easy to track as our blood.
I heard the term andropause for the whatever it is that. Right? And there's like a decline in testosterone at that same age, and there's all these subtle changes that happen. It's not nearly as powerful or obvious as menopause, but there is finally getting set like a name or some recognition for it. Andropause.
Andropause.
Mm-hmm. Andros, mm-hmm. yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
right.
This is interesting. When we women talk about menses and menopause, the men will also identify with their pauses and talk about them more freely. That's nice. That's really great. Yeah.
Because along with our, and anthropologically, there's like a tribe, or there's some tribes where the man or the shaman will incise his penis so it will bleed, and that get over his, when he becomes an adolescent, over time, that keeps happening. And then, like that's like one of the most sacred spiritual things a man can do. And takes him to higher spiritual levels mm-hmm. than the other men. Mm-hmm. That's, you know.
A ritual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a man wanting to have the female experience.
In Mexico. But I think this was in the Aboriginal book.
Yeah.
Right. That the book Dreaming Day or something. Or it's, yeah, yes, Australian.
So Leti is saying that in Mexico it's a very ancient practice.
Mm-hmm.
From the Mayan times.
the Maya culture. Well, in some of the ruins, mm-hmm. you see the, but it was a ritual for the people who were in the royalty or who were, mm-hmm. who had to run, to guide others or uh-huh. something like that. And there's, you can see a stone and it's carved with that ritual. Oh, no? Okay. You can see the bleeding. And you see, what's that? Oh. Yeah. But it was a sacred uh-huh. ritual uh-huh. or something
so
like that.
So a sacred ritual for men was to sort of replicate the bleeding process which women had.
I don't know if that does. I don't know wow. if it was mm-hmm. that, but yeah, I mean, it was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most vulnerable part of their body. And
yeah, exactly.
They were taking the most vulnerable part of their body as men, and they were sticking a sea urchin spine or a sea ray, stingray spine through it. A stingray spine has a poison on it that makes it terribly painful. When people step on stingrays, they have pain sometimes for months. So that's what they were doing. And
so they were torturing themselves.
They were torturing themselves. They were proving how tough they were. A typical male thing.
Wow. Women must have been really powerful in that civilization, no?
Oh, yeah.
For men to want to imitate the... It is a form of imitation, I'm assuming. Thank you. This is a fascinating discussion. Yeah.
That's a subject for a whole other thing.
Why don't you say it? Just a bit.
My mother went through menopause at the age of 40, which was when I was born. So she never got her menses after my birth. She became totally crazy for really through my about until I was about 6. And I've seen that in other women. That's kind of symptomology. Mm-hmm. And it's for me particularly terrifying, mm-hmm. having gone through it as a child.
Uh-huh. Why was it terrifying?
Oh, she became a monster. My brother and I used to hide. My brother was 7 years older than I, and we used to hide under the dining room table for hours from my mother, who would go into these terrible rages and destructive rages. And really, when she was done with that, she was perfectly normal again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She lived a long life, didn't she?
83. She died at 83.
So there you go. Your mother went through 40 years of the paused state,
mm-hmm.
which in your mother's life would have been longer than any other state in her life. Because if she went into menopause at 40, and she lived till 83, 43 years.
That was probably the happiest period in her life, too.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
Judging from what she told me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed the men are sharing. How wonderful. Hmm.
I guess this is a good place then to... I noticed it took me just to a kind of deep place also, reflecting on I don't know, cultural changes, because you're talking about the generation of baby boomers and how that kind of impacts us as a whole, and memories of my own growing up and my mother, and then my own body changes. And yes, go ahead.
You know, interestingly, I'd like to say one more thing. While I was doing research, my daughter-in-law in India pointed me to this book, Princess, the True Story of Life Behind the Veil in Saudi Arabia. And on one hand, I was reading Christine Northrup, MD, The Wisdom of Menopause. And on the other hand, I was reading about princess, the princess in Saudi Arabia. And both of them are chronologically in the same time. You know, the dates and the time are the same. They're going through very different processes, you know, because Christine is an American and she's a doctor. And here is this veiled princess who has written this through a ghost, not a ghostwriter. She's written, this woman has, Jean Sassoon has written for her in her voice, her experiences as a princess in Saudi Arabia today. And as you can imagine, their lives are dramatically different. However, the energy of both the women, their secondary process, is amazingly similar. So when I put both, when I finished reading both the books and I put them away, and I thought the oomph and the anger and the power and the desire to change the world and to expose things and to make things better and to help other women are almost identically the same. And it's a magical thing to find how we women are so well connected. You know, it doesn't matter what your background is or where you come from or what your community is like. The energy is so amazing. Just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. There's a last little tidbit on longevity. I just read in the
paper. Okay, let me.
Okay. It doesn't. For Japanese women that are born, for a Japanese female that's born this year, they have every expectation, according to the health statistics, of making it until the start of the next century. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Menopause.
Mm-hmm. 91 years.
Not the longest living group again.
91 years. But this current generation of baby boomers is going to live till 84. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the women even longer.
Maybe. I mean, that's the average age. Yeah.
This is such a rich area for discussion. I wish there were more of a forum for it. It seems to me in years past we had strings that we did a lot of discussing of all sorts of issues on, and that seems to have died out. And I'm wondering, is it because there are no longer strings that everyone subscribes to? Has everything been divided up, or is there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like an answer to this while we're still in a situation where it's going to be, there are going to be people all over the world listening to it.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So, like there used to be, we used to discuss this on the local string, and then we were told we shouldn't do that, and there was a world string created, and then that doesn't seem to be subscribed to anymore. And Jiro, do you have some info on that?
Okay, this is just personal observation, but my point of view is string is great if you cannot meet face to face, but the what you pass on string is like 2 kilobytes or something. And when we meet and we like at 1 second, 2 terabytes per second, like I don't know, billion times. So just how much you put in effort and how much you get from there are like extremely different. I think that's why. Like, just so, that's my opinion. Yeah.
Maybe another way. Oh, Bruce.
That's true too.
I think what Jiro is saying, that it's a difficult and political subject, and face-to-face contact may be a better way to start than to go on a string, and I would actually support that for now.
So it sounds like there's both the need for more discussion, maybe in person, but I think that if there is if you have that inspiration to start a string, I would welcome you to do it. And then you could even just put something on local inviting folks to say, you know, we're starting up a discussion string on menopause and menstruation or whatever you want to say. So
thank you guys for your enthusiasm. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your passion.
Yeah. It's hard to pause, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kalpana. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And the next research symposium, we're going to have a break, and it will be in September. So if anyone has a topic that you'd like to offer yourself or suggest... Women's ejaculation is a suggested topic. Okay. And, yeah, please contact me if you have a topic. And if anyone would like to make a donation to the research symposium, I'd appreciate it. Thanks, everyone. It's by the door. Okay. Thanks, Kalpana.
Good night. Thank you. Thank you, Katya. Good night, everybody. Thank you.